Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of rumradio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and rumradio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on rumradio.org.
And the crowd went. Fill in the blank. Actually, there was only one homeless guy. There was one homeless guy out there, and I gave him a couple bucks, and he came in. He was reluctant, though. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. As a matter of fact, we just discovered, or science just discovered, that there was a completely new and unknown universe, not a galaxy, but universe. I'm telling you, I was so excited when I heard the news, I went out and applied for position of center. I used that as...
And you played basketball too, right?
What?
You
Pardon
play
me?
Basketball too.
I do.
Yeah.
I said that at I was at the meeting today, the Heights group, and I hadn't been there for a while. They allowed me to tell my story about 6 months ago and got a good reception there. And I like the Heights group. That's real AA over there, and they're open-minded, and they stick to the big book, and it's a very excellent group. You know, when they like you, you like them kind of deal. And it was funny, I spoke. I got there for the 10 o'clock meeting, and I got to share, and I was really on. For whatever reason, my jokes were just hitting. They were hitting good. There was a newcomer in there, and I tell the newcomer, I says, you're the most important person in the room beside me, or unless the room catches fire.
I like that.
Yeah, so in other words, you're important. I told them that the newcomer was life's blood to AA, that just like the old-timers, the backbone, where relapse was the soul, because there was nothing so tormented as a head full of AA and a belly full of booze.
Yeah.
And I explained to them that my wife had become unmanageable. Where the first step says our life had become unmanageable. I used wife, and I gave my little litany, but I was striking on all eight cylinders. You know what I mean, Harold? I mean, I was just rocking, but I had a good message, and they enjoyed the message. One guy wanted to talk. It wasn't that I believe that I talk so long, although I don't mind. I think it was just what I was saying was very condensed. There was a lot of good information in a very short period of time, but it seems longer when there's a lot of pertinent information coming at you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you're processing more information in a shorter span of time, so it seems like it's longer. You know, certain times when time seems to slow down, when you go to exercise, time slows down. When you're doing things that you're not really enjoying to do, like yard work, time slows down.
Yes, and I've had some sponsees, when I'm trying to convey some real important information, they get so sleepy they can hardly keep their eyes open. Have you noticed that?
I had a dog like that. It was a Westie. What I would try to train this dog, and I don't know some about Westies, but it seems that they have a very small brain pan. If you look at their configuration of the skull, it took a lot of work to get that dog to do minimal amount of tricks and understandings and things. And I would just keep repeating it and repeating it. And, you know, and Texas gets pretty hot in the summer and we're outside and it's hot. And it got to the point where the dog would start yawning.
Yeah, I had an Irish setter like that.
And that was the signal that it took as much as it could handle, and it couldn't handle anymore. It was really trying as hard as it possibly could try to assimilate the information, but it had reached capacity. And I believe that's what's happening with your sponsees. They have reached capacity. There's just no more in there. And, of course, now the switch goes off. They're sleepy.
Yeah.
How do I disengage from this conversation? I'm going to go to sleep, I think. That's my experience. So I think that's kind of a valid. So the interesting part about that trip, that share, I was giving out the Rum Radio cards. You know, I had a good reception. You know, once you got them laughing, you usually got them listening.
Yes.
People are intrigued. What I've noticed is that there's two masks of drama, if you've ever noticed. There's a mask of pathos and the mask of comedy. And those two masks make drama. So you can't have comedy without pathos. Without the pain of living through things, which is pathos, living in pain, that derived real comedy. So I didn't want to be this funny, but I have a tendency to have a very elevated sense of humor, and I could pass that on. I'm a good joke teller. I'm a good storyteller. I have that because of, I believe, the pathos. And then AA is filled with people who've gone through hell, that have a lot of pain. So we're not a glum lot. We like to laugh, and we can laugh at things that most people will not find funny. You going to say?
In fact, I like to guarantee that we give the newcomer, give this a try. If it's not what you're looking for, then after a few weeks, we guarantee double your misery back.
Yeah, just to let them know, you're not obligated. If you're more comfortable being miserable, you know, that's your choice. But we got an answer for you. So, yeah, we do. And it was a good share. There's a lot of, and you know, when you have a couple good shares, not just mine, but there was some really good shares in there. But it livened everything up, brought the spirit in, and it was a really good meeting. You know, people were inspired and enlivened by what was said in the meeting. And some meetings are like that, not all, but most of them have an underpinnings of gratitude. I believe most AA meetings, regardless of the topic spin, are gratitude meetings.
They should be.
And an attitude – pardon me?
They should be.
Yeah, I think it just evolves that way. You know, we say a prayer, which is called an invocation in the beginning, yeah? And that's inviting the spirit in. And then everyone speaks of gratitude of one form or another, usually, not everybody, but most people talk that they're glad to be sober, they're glad to be there. So you have that gratitude, and I believe an attitude of gratitude is a prayer in itself unto God.
Yes.
Because the scriptures say, you know, keep in your heart, you know, pray continuously. And it tells you how to do that. In your heart, keep the Psalms, which are the songs of David, in religious songs, and in thanksgiving. So in other words, it doesn't have to be a religious song, but what they're saying is songs that are uplifting and edifying, thoughts that elevate you. And that's what it's asking you to do. And thanksgiving is a form of elevation. It's a form of humility. So when you do that, so we do that in the program. We have that Thanksgiving, and then we end the meeting. How do we end? We end with a prayer, not everywhere, but in this neck of the woods. That's called a benediction, the last prayer in a meeting, and that was thanking that the Spirit was among us. It's another form of gratitude. So you have that.
Yes.
You have that whole. You get your spiritual bump when you go to a meeting. So it was a very good meeting. I'm giving out my cards. People are accepting them because they found interest in what I had to say. There was a newcomer. I was working with the newcomer and, you know, did some work after the meeting. So I went back into the rooms to hand out, see if anybody I missed. You know, there was two doors. I can only work one door at a time. Went in there, see if there was any folks left in there I could give a card to. And this one fellow, I've met him before. Old timer. He's got at least 20 years. Got a real interesting story. Had been in prison. Met Jesus in prison. I'm convinced that Jesus lives in most of the prisons. He's there.
Yes.
Everybody meets Jesus in prison. They might leave him in the prison when they leave, but he's there when they get there. There's no doubt about it. He's there when they get there. And then, of course, some of these guys are fair weather friends. They don't take them out. They just leave them there for the next guy. And so I tried to converse with him, and he said, oh, I gave him a card. He said, oh, yeah, I had one, and blah, blah, blah. He said, I really like what you're doing. He said, look, I want to critique you.
Oh, nice. Is he a member of Toastmasters International or something?
No. Just a very intelligent man, quite astute. And he says, you probably don't get critiqued much. I don't go to many meetings anymore. But so usually when, you know, I went to the meeting, there's a lot of pent up in me. I have a lot of information, you know, and that I could get out in a short period of time. But anyway, so he said, he says, you probably never get this kind of critique. And I said, okay. He says, you were too funny. He said you had a really good message. He says, but you would always, like, you'd go 40 words and tell a joke. He says, that stand-up comedian stuff really doesn't work as well. He says, some of that message is being lost in the laughter.
I said, well, I tried to,
it was hard. There was another lady there, and she wanted his attention, so I was trying to retort. We had a nice little conversation. I said, you know, some people don't know me, and they don't like me. Some people get to know me, then they don't like me. And it's none of my business what you think of me, because you think so little of me anyway. Well, he took exception to that. He said, it is important sometimes what we think people think of us. He said, because, you know, and then we got into through a glass darkly, you know, we don't see ourselves like other people see us, and we don't know ourselves like other people know us, but through a glass darkly, face to face. And the dark glass, they call it the veil. We don't get to see ourselves. It's an obscure view of ourselves. And then Thomas Merton said, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, we would truly be humble. And Seurat, who's a French philosopher, said, if you could see yourselves like other people see you, you would disappear on the spot.
Yes.
And Robert Browning, the plowboy poet, said in the Poetry to a Louse, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, many a foolish notion it would dispel. So, you know, we were bantering. Then he recited a poem. What was it? Invictus? That's one of your favorites. Master of my fate, captain of my soul.
Remind me of more of it.
Well, I don't know what else to say. I'm the master of my feet, the fate, and the captain of my soul. Invictus, the whole Invictus.
Yes.
You had mentioned it before. I guess it's not your favorite. So it's very, you know, you're going to do it no matter what. You're going to be able to overcome and prevail. He recited that, and he recited something. So he was articulate, and he had the love of Jesus. He knew scriptures like that, and so, you know, he said, "I really like what you're doing." He said, "I really do. You got a great message out," and that was his deal. What do you think of that, Harold?
Well, my experience, if I liked the humor of Red Skelton because it was not at anyone else's expense. He would poke fun at himself, very, very funny. And I agree with you that once we get them laughing, we've really got their attention, and it really helps a lot. So sometimes it's sour grapes, you know. Some folks just don't tell a story that well, and they don't tell a joke that well. When they come across someone who does, it's a bit of sour grapes. I don't know. I wasn't there, but... I don't know you to tell jokes at anyone else's expense, so I'm inclined to think that it would be sour grapes. If you have dipped into humor at someone else's expense, then I think there may be a little too much of that. But I don't know you to be that way. I like your humor.
No, there was none of that. No, matter of fact, that's what this fellow mentioned, was that his deal was self-deprecation. He would do that to get people's interest, and he knew that he did that on purpose for that benefit. If you ever notice the really good comedians, they're very self-deprecating. They only poke fun at themselves, and people enjoy that. You know, there was very few really successful comics that point at other people. Most of the time, it's about them. Yeah, that they're fat, it's their wife, it's their, you know, traffic ticket, it's their this, it's their. It's about them, their failings. And people like to see other people's failings. And admitting to that is a form of humor. It's like
flipping
the banana peel.
A lot, yeah. He said that he would just like to pull onto the freeway one time without other cars pointing to his tires.
yeah, things like that. Yeah, oh, yeah, the guy's like me. He can't afford a tire. I can relate to that.
Yes.
Oh, the guy can't stop eating. Yeah, I can relate to that. I can't, you know. My wife's always badgering me. Yeah, I can relate to that. And then when they, you know, take my wife. No, I'm serious. Take my wife. I always like the one with the Henny Youngman. I haven't used those in a long time. I go to the doctor, and it's the doctor, you know, he has a physical, and the doctor says, "I got bad news." He says, "You only got 6 months to live." And he says, "Doctor, there's no way I can pay all your fee in 6 months." And the doctor says, "All right, take a year." As long as the fee is paid. Anyway, I thought that was interesting that that happened today.
Yes.
Being told I was too funny in an AA meeting. That's got to be a classic.
Yeah.
I think if you lived 10 lifetimes, you wouldn't hear that.
Right.
I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. And they do it as a public service. They don't charge us any money for doing this to get the word out in that neck of the woods. And that's a nice little neck. It's about 1 million households that have access to that station at any given time, especially, I think, during the day. I don't know, at night. They have, it's an AM station. It's an interesting station. There's only two people who run it. Hoyt is the computer guy. They got banks of computers, which, you know, run all this. And then there's one salesman, Tony. He's the horse. He brings in the money. And it's interesting, he calls up, like he'll call up a real estate agent and say, look, Mary does has a ad with us. Don't you, Mary, don't you want to have, or Alice, don't you want to have an ad with us too? Well, sure, Mary's got one, Alice has got to get one, and that's how they get their audience. And they're advertisers, and he's really good at that. He'll close them every time. He's a great closer. And those are the two guys that run this one horse. It's a two horse radio station. Isn't that amazing? Computers can do that because they can take up a lot of. This guy works 7 days a week and hasn't taken a day off in 11 years.
That's two horsepower and a bunch of terabytes.
Well, I think it's a horse and a mule, actually. A Missouri mule. That's amazing. The guy who owns the station is like, I don't know, 94 years old, and he's doddering. But because he gets all this free labor, he refuses to die. As long as he's getting all this free labor, he can't give it up. He's not going to give up his life. Anyway,
that's
but
true.
Thanks, guys. Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
Thank you, guys, for doing this for us. We get the word out. Hopefully, there's people listening in that area, and they're getting something out of this. And then we also have, as a sponsor, we have RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. This April... They don't do it on April 1st. Who knows? I think the February issue came out on the 20th of February or something. It's just somewhere in the month that they produce their work. But it goes out to like 30 or 35 or 40,000 people on the Internet. They don't do paper anymore. It's a regional. I think they do Austin and San Antonio and Houston area that goes out. And then they're going to send out that one I did on the 12 steps to a happy, joyous, and free life. So that'll be coming out. If it's not out, it'll be coming out pretty soon. So I have high hopes, but I always have high hopes. High hopes, high apple pie in the sky hopes. Remember that?
Yep.
The ram butting the dam. Persistence. I'm persistent. I might not be good looking and smart, but I am persistent. So that should be coming out. That'll be coming out, and I'm hoping for a bounce in readership when that does come out, and get them to rumradio.org for them to do the sponsorship information. So thank you guys for doing that. I'm also sponsored by, and I don't think you know this, one of the Facebook recovery chat rooms.
Oh, that's good.
I don't think I ever told you, the Rowdy Rum. If you logged on to Facebook and you went to the Rowdy Rum, and their rum is an acronym for something altogether different, but there was a synergy, maybe because of the name, the original starter of that page went to Rum Radio, liked it, and now I guess it's been at least almost 2 years now, I think. Time's starting to slip away, but on the top they have two rams butting heads, and it's a recovery site where they discuss recovery. And they're very, very, they try to keep it to recovery situations. They don't go too far afield. It's not like a big book. There's another one called Big Book Thumpers or Alcoholics Anonymous. They keep it more to the big book and a little bit more thin. What's a good word? More structured for that. But the Rowdy Rum is a little bit more open. They just went. Oh, they're approaching 9,000. And Big Book Thumpers went over 10,000. They made me I'm an admin in both of them, but they have on the top banner where the two rams are, they have, we sponsor rumradio.org.
That's terrific.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, so, and, you know, and these people who run these things are dyed in the wool, long-term, big book thumpers. These aren't just people that are coming in with no time. I'm talking about people who are circuit speakers, people who have written to AA, people who have gotten things published in the grapevine, people of note in their section and regions of the country. So they know what recovery looks like, and they support Rum Radio. Isn't that great?
That is great. I really like that. Let me take a moment to comment to our listeners. The people that do these radio programs and websites and chat rooms are doing so at their own expense. This stuff isn't free, and Joseph does not make money from the radio program or the website. It's not a money-making proposition. We do this as a public service, and no money comes in. In fact, quite a bit of money goes out, and Joseph has shouldered that for the last 4 years by himself. So I really appreciate him doing that. I've got the chat room open, Joseph, so let me give out the call number, and if you're listening to this, you can call in and ask a question or make a comment about recovery, and our focus is especially about working with other people and working the steps together, how to find a sponsor, how to be a sponsor. And the phone number to call in is 949-534-0621. Let me say it again more slowly, 949-534-0621. So call in and make a comment or ask a question, or you can go to the chat room. The website is rumradio.org, rumradio.org, all one word, and in the upper right corner you see the word live. You can press that and then look at the right side of the Blog Talk Radio website where it takes you automatically, and you'll find the chat room. So there are two ways to ask questions and participate in the program. Back to you, Joseph.
Well, thank you, Harold. And it's a little late, but I'd like to gratefully introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. Excuse me, Jeff Frog jumped in. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I believe personally, as the family goes, so does the nation, so does the country, so does the world. I believe the breakdown of the family is probably the biggest cause of the epidemic of drug and alcohol addiction in the world today. Harold also goes to the prisons. I got some really good statistics. Yesterday, Greg Williams. Do you remember Greg, Harold?
Yes.
He was the fellow who did the, he's the producer of Anonymous People. It's a full-length motion picture about people in AA and around AA getting the word out, people coming out of the closet in addiction recovery, willing to come step forward and say, yes, there's a onus that people were afraid of back when. The traditions, which is the bulwark of AA for the groups, anonymity is a huge part of it. And that anonymity, Dr. Bob, one of the co-founders, said, there's two ways you would break anonymity in press, radio, and films. And if you were so anonymous that the other drunks couldn't find you. Oh, and this brings to the point is that it has to do with affiliation. People miss that. They misunderstand what that's supposed to mean. One, it means that no one speaks individually for the affiliation with AA. That's what it means. So if I say, my name is Joseph Gansey, and I'm a person in long-term recovery, I didn't break anything. I didn't break break the traditions of anonymity because I'm not affiliated. I'm not speaking for AA, NA, CA. I'm speaking for Rum Radio and rumradio.org, which were closer to Paranoids Anonymous, but nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. That's the point. So what they're doing is some of the folks are coming out now, and there's, you know, we have judges and senators and governors and the people of industry. Of course, we always have the musicians and thespians and financial magicians, people of note, people who've elevated themselves to positions of prominence, of wealth and fame, who turn out to be alcoholic or drug addicts. Man, wow. So that kind of takes the onus off. Now, of course, there's always somebody who's going to say who's not in the program and they're not familiar with the concept of the disease of alcoholism. You know, Bill Mayer, Mayer said that what everything that used to be a sin is now a disease.
Yes.
So if you've been in the throes of alcoholism, you can understand what that looks like, the compulsive behavior, being out of control. Dr. Young said, and I'll paraphrase, that alcohol was in a form a man's way of searching for wholeness with God. Looking for God at the wrong address.
Yes.
People like to drink essentially because they like the sensation it produces. Same thing with drugs. But what happens is it turns on you. It gets to the point where you lose the power of choice. It's an allergic reaction. Now, some people are born genetically predisposed to have a allergic reaction, you know, just like you're allergic to daisies or to the ragweed. Some people are predisposed to have an allergy to alcohol, probably because they have alcoholism in their families for generations. Maybe, you know, the scriptures say, you know, the curse of the father shall be down 3 and 4 generations. I believe that has something to do with propensity of what had gone prior to genetically predisposed because of some incident or accident or what have you. But over the generations, it's developed. Some people just drink enough long-term where they develop the allergy. Does it really matter? No. Once, we like to say in the program, you might have started off as a cucumber, and now you're a pickle. And once you're a pickle, you can't go back to being a cucumber. You're always going to be a pickle. Get used to the idea that you're going to be a pickle, but you don't have to live that way anymore. So once we do that, so Carol goes to with the families and the children. I believe the children aren't taught correct principles. So Greg Williams is in town, was in town for this weekend. He was at the, I forget the name of the center. He was down in Memorial, which is a part of Houston. They had a sober film festival, and he was there. I got to meet him in person yesterday. I was down there, and, you know, he gave me a hug, and we had a little, you know, chat, but he's in big demand. He's making another movie like he did. This is Anonymous People for the Young People, for the people under 30. Which is quite a few coming in now in AA, NA, and CA, the younger generations. They're coming in younger. So I had a question for them. I said, I posed a question about singleness of purpose. I call it singleness of purpose, and I don't believe it holds any water. It's probably the only point that I don't agree with program principles. Bill W. came up with singleness of purpose, that we can't be everything to everyone and that we need to concentrate on the alcoholic and not disperse our understanding. I don't get it. I don't understand that concept. I understand when it comes to drugs and alcohol, I believe they're equal opportunity destroyers. I don't see the big difference. Now, there are some people that don't do alcohol. They just do drugs. Most alcoholics will do drugs. So there's such a fine line of understanding, and it only has to do with step one. Step one is the only step that mentions the addictive substance, alcohol or drugs. The other 11 steps are the solution. It's also called a design for living. So we live in the solution. We don't live in the problem. So why should we nitpick at the problem? So I don't get that. I don't. But some people in the program, some alcoholics, they're really tough on that. And then, of course, that's lend itself to NA. They're really tough on the fact that they need to be separate. You know, if it works for you, it's fine. Nobody's going to tell you what works and what doesn't work. If it works, it works. If it don't, it don't. That's it. What's your thoughts on that, Harold?
Well, the I shy away from the word alcoholism and alcoholic. I even shy away from the word addiction. At this point, there's so many people who want to escape reality, and they use alcohol or drugs or gambling or porn, and the problem is escaping from reality, not how we do it. One of my original sponsors said many things that really helped me a lot. One was, he doesn't really care what clothes the alcohol wears. Like I said, well, my drink of choice is tequila, but a lot of people switch to beer, or they switch to wine, or they switch to any number of things. It doesn't really matter what clothes the alcohol wears. And underneath all of the escape from reality is a certain level of selfishness and self-centeredness. That's really where the problem lies, in my opinion, because if a person stops drinking and they don't work on that selfishness and that pride, then they're just going to be in what we call a dry drunk. So the point is to learn to grow up, to work on ourselves, get rid of the selfishness and pride, and then we've really got something. We've got recovery. So I've been to many, many AA meetings and many NA meetings. I've been to Celebrate Recovery meetings. They use the same 12 steps, and they worship Jesus Christ. And my sponsor told me that drinking and drugging is a search for God at the wrong address. That really helped me a lot. So gradually, I had a gradual awakening. You know, there are two types, the white light instantaneous awakening and the gradual sort, the educational variety. Mine was of the second type, the educational variety, and I really, really enjoy learning more and more about God, what God thinks, what pleases God, and it has really added a tremendous amount to my recovery and to the 12 steps. The 12 steps gave me a start in that direction, and now I'm even attending Al-Anon, which I think is AA graduate school. So for all you folks that have a lot of years and been to a lot of meetings, try Al-Anon if you really want some graduate school, some higher education. Joseph?
Yes, I believe that Al-Anon is postgraduate AA. It's,
yes.
I usually suggest to my sponsees, if you really want to be a good sponsor, go to Al-Anon, because you're going to be dealing with a lot of drunks, and that's a good idea. But after a certain period of time, what happens is that the drugs and the alcohol have no allure anymore. You know, we're neither cocky or are we afraid. You know, which I use cockney or filleted, but we're not neither one. So, and then approach, if we approach alcohol, we recoil from it like from a hot flame. So it doesn't become an issue anymore that people like to keep that in the forefront, that we're never really recovered. We have a daily reprieve, and I get all that. It's about spiritual growth. But the key really isn't about the drug and the alcohol at a certain part of your recovery. It really comes down to interpersonal relationships, and that's where Al-Anon really shines. How do you live in the world? How do you deal with people? And, I mean, it's all about relationships, and that's where Al-Anon really comes in. How do you deal with people that are not in recovery and that are crazy? How do you deal with all these crazy people out there? And I really believe in Al-Anon as a as part of the recovery process. So when I talked to Greg and I was watching the film, they were having statistics. It was really working well when they were trying. They've tried this before, what he's doing, getting the word out on drugs, and then I believe it was Reagan came in, and Reagan started the war on drugs, which really undermined the whole and increased the criminal aspect. The number of people going to prison because of the drug wars were phenomenal. The cost was like 80% of everybody in prison. Do you know that? 80% is about drugs and alcohol.
Yes. Yeah.
80%. So instead of seeing about rehabilitation and information, we're locking you up, baby. Just say no. Because they didn't really get it. They didn't understand how the disease worked. That's like saying anybody who gets cancer is going to go to prison. But they couldn't connect the two. Then you had George Bush Sr. He kept the ball rolling. So we had all these years that undermined what was trying to be accomplished by bringing drugs and alcohol out of the closet. It's very interesting. I recommend that film highly. It's called The Anonymous People. And now he's doing it with the younger folks. And the problem with the older folks in recovery and anywhere else is that we get set in our ways. We are not open to change. So concepts that are alien to us, not to me, I'm open-minded, but these are alien concepts, some of the stuff, is going to be resisted. Any new idea is first fraught with ridicule, then violent opposition. And when the violent opposition passes away, acceptance is being self-evident. But you have to go through that cycle, and I do that with Rum Radio. You know that, Harold. I get it. I've had all that. I've had ridicule. I've been physically violated and all, you know, because what I'm trying to do, nobody's really ever done this before in this manner, so it threatens people. Why? You know, people. I was talking to a lady over there the other day. They said, oh, how come you don't go to Post Oak? I said, I've been banned. Why? Well, I gave out the cards for Rum Radio. She says, you got to be kidding. No, I'm not kidding. They didn't like the idea that I was giving out business cards directing people to a recovery site. Drove them nuts. Couldn't handle it. Why? It's ego. Nobody ever did it before like that. So there's a threat immediately. The unknown is always a threat. They wouldn't look at it. I had a sponsor, Bob B., 34 years sobriety, and when I was putting this together, I said, Bob, take a look at Rum Radio. Tell me if I'm staying within program principles. You know what he told me, Harold?
What?
After 5 tries in as many months, asking him to take a look, finally he said, now because you're bugging me, I'm never going to look. My grand sponsor told me the same thing. I will never look. What's up with that?
Well, the entire internet was quite intimidating to some of the older set a few years ago. This has been going many years now. I really admire that.
Oh yeah, it's going to. Yeah, I think that this is the wave. I don't think it's going to change at all. But anyway, so they were showing the prisoners and the numbers, the cost for alcohol and drugs. I don't remember exactly. I think it was like, I don't know, $8 billion. It was in the billions. Billions of dollars are being sucked up. Oh, in the we're going to build more walls, more bars, more guards. More walls, more bars, more guards. Instead of putting this money into rehabilitation, education, no. More walls, more bars, more guards. So it's disconcerting for some folks in the program that they really want to see a change. You know, a change is afoot. And I believe AA is part, Rum Radio is part of that change. I'd like to continue on with this. We had read How It Works. What do you think? Read How It Works?
Oh, yeah.
I think this is real important. This is read in just about every AA meeting. Now, like I said, this is an AA. This is Rum Radio. The one thing, though, you have to remember is that the big book, the basic text of AA, has the 12 steps in it. And the 12 step, that's the original root. That's the template of all 12-step programs. And do you ever wonder why it's 12? Why 12, Harold?
12 steps.
Yeah, why 12?
It's just in tune with many other things on the planet. 12 seasons.
Okay. 12 apostles.
Yes.
12 days of Christmas.
12 days of Christmas, yes.
Why 12?
I have found
that 12, you know? You don't know.
No.
You got to Google it. You know, Google, 1,000 years hence, the society, the anthropologists will have concluded that it's a society they all commune with an all-knowing God named Google. And 12 is the number of the ultimate authority. You like that?
Yes.
It does have a ring to it, doesn't it? He's got, yeah, when you hear it, you go, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, this is How It Works. It's Chapter 5 from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's get rid of that frog. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Though those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Let's see, what we got? Sorry, I got distracted here. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends, important, to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guidelines to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That's step 1, by the way. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That's step 2. And C, that God could and would if he was sought. And that's step 3. Did you ever consider that, that A, B, and C is steps 1, 2, and 3?
I think that's important, yes.
I believe you could do the first 3 steps sitting at a traffic light, unless you're sitting at a traffic light in the Big Apple. Do you know why?
Why?
Because the New York minute is made up of the annoyed nanosecond. That's why they call it a New York minute. If you're ever in New York City and the light changes, the horn, the guy behind you will beep his horn prior to or exactly at the change of the light, just in case you weren't paying attention. He's in a hurry. How come you're not?
I see.
A friend of mine told me that in Saudi Arabia they have traffic lights, believe it or not. And when the light, and there might be a line of cars, and when the light changes, they all start beeping their horn. Like it's all supposed to move simultaneously. And they do it every time, he said. That's how impatient they are in Saudi Arabia. They expect the light to change and everybody to move simultaneously. Anyway, so one thing before we close, I want to get your thing on your thought on this. I see what our goal is in Rum Radio, and I had considered this, and I hope it comes to fruition. I wrote this on Facebook, and it was accepted widely. It has to do with the 12 and 12 on step 5. Until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So what does that mean? It means that not only are we supposed to speak a fifth step, we're supposed to hear a fifth step. Who hears
yes.
a fifth step?
Your sponsor.
Who hears the fifth step? The sponsor, so most likely, and I've had some people disagree with that because the big book actually says that, you know, other people other than the sponsor can listen to a fifth step, someone who's not going to dissuade us or knows what we're driving at, so it leaves it kind of open. The 12 and 12 actually codifies it a little bit more. A lot of people dismiss the 12 and 12. I think that's silly. We know so little, more shall be disclosed, all of that. They don't get it. Why we have so much little information, why not have a little bit more? But the 12 and 12 says that. So until we've heard a fifth step. So when hearing a fifth, so if you haven't heard a fifth step yet, what you're doing is you're circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and then it's another crash and burn. So what I see, if AA, NA, and CA want to start moving, and any of the other 12-step programs want to start moving in the direction that used to be, the key would be for people to come in and as a rite of passage to hear a fifth step. Well, there's not that many new people coming in, so that means what are you going to do? You're going to have to go to the three-quarter houses. You're going to have to go to the halfway houses. You're going to have to go to the VA. You're going to have to go to the hospital. You might even have to go to Skid Row. Who knows? But you're going
to
have
prison.
To go find... Then the prisons, yeah. And these are the places where people are always looking for sponsors to do this work. So until you're willing to do that work, you still don't belong. And see, if that becomes the new person says, hey, I want to belong here. I want to be one of these folks. I want to be in this group. I want to be in the middle of the herd. You know, because if I'm not in the middle of the herd, then I could get picked off anytime by a wild creature that circles the herd. So, hey, I want to be in the middle. So how do I get it? How do I get accepted? You have to go hear a fifth step. Wow. Could you imagine? There would be standing room only. That's the way I see it. What do you think, Harold?
I like that. I like that a lot. We, in fact, I tell everyone, as I'm describing what the 12 steps are all about, I mention to folks that they'll be learning how to turn their pride into humility and their selfishness into sacrificial giving, and they will go through the 12 steps. And that is preparation for helping someone newer in the program go through their 12 steps. And so that I let people know right off the bat that we are interested in helping you help someone newer through their program of recovery. And that's when your program of recovery really makes sense and settles in. So I think people should move through their program more quickly, like they did back in the 1930s and 1940s. And really, they had much better results than we have these days. And I think there's a reason for that, because they went through the steps more quickly. That's my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I see no doubt about that. The more I've been around, that's why on the website we have how to take somebody through in 24 hours. Now, most people are going to balk at that, and that's quite a chore to do that. I've never done it. I've never attempted it. Mine usually takes 30 days to 6 weeks. That's what my experience. Sometimes they drag it out to 12 weeks. What happens is once they start getting sober, they get a life back, they got a job, they got a wife, they got a kid, they got a lawn, and recovery kind of takes a back seat.
And so it kind of drags out the process, which I think is kind of, it kind of hurts everybody in the long run. But the short term is they used to do it within a couple of days. You did the surrender on your knees, which was the first three steps, and then there was only six steps, and then they would get into it. But even in the beginning when the 12 steps come from, that's when they still had the 50% got it right away and the other 25% after a few relapses. Wow, 75% recovery rate. And a lot of people today, it doesn't say they can't wrap their head around that, and the problem is the time. Can thorough rob timely? And yes, it does rob timely. Getting them through, now there's no guarantee that they're going to stay sober, one, but if they've done all 12 steps, it's not a slip, now it's a relapse, and we leave the light on. So they're never going to drink again with impunity because now they know better. And I think that's why 25% had a few relapses, and then they got it. Because by then, they had worked the steps, and they knew better. But they were still going to go out and drink some more. They had to just make sure that this was for them, and then they came back in because the light was on. They knew where to find us. All right, so I think we can close her down here. Harold, any last words?
Well, I really appreciate having the opportunity to come on and to give back. I've received so much from all the sponsors that I've had and the times that I've worked the steps and my sponsees. So I want to thank all my sponsees. That's how recovery works. And I appreciate folks for listening, and I appreciate that they will pick up the 12 steps, find someone to help them work those steps and really get their recovery off the ground. So I pray for your success, and I appreciate you praying for mine. Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. You know, one man can make a difference. If you think you could change the world, it's either grandiose romanticism or politics. You change the world one man at a time. And sometimes the man that made the change is the sponsor. Because who would have thought that the selfish, self-centered, self-seeking individual would have given of his time, talents, and treasures to the benefit of someone else for no reward? There's no reward expected. Wow, that's quite the change, huh?
Yes.
Anyway, if you're looking for good sponsorship information, the website is Rum Radio and rumradio.org. Remember, and we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.